the case to those who are complicit. I think it's time for weapons companies, you mentioned Boeing in that clip, to stop sending weapons. There are legal responsibilities and, frankly, moral responsibilities.
We have 5 seconds.
We call on the Biden administration to heed its at least moral responsibility and stop aiding and abetting genocide.
Catherine Gallagher, Senior Staff Attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a Director of Development to lead our fundraising team. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Berk, Renee Feldstein, Augusta, Sharifa Belkadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warren, of Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomas on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Join Democracy Now! For our expanded two-hour daily coverage from the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. We'll be at the RNC in Milwaukee from July 15th to 19th and at the DNC in Chicago from August 19th to 23rd. We'll be reporting from the streets to the corporate suites to the convention floor, bringing you the voices of people from the top to the bottom, inside and out. That's Democracy Now!, breaking with convention.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights, and much more. Tune in and listen to Free Culture Radio on the third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Pacific here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from local businesses. Do you have a local business or an upcoming event you would like KBOO's listeners to know about? Consider purchasing an underwriting spot before your favorite KBOO show. Take advantage of the best rate and audience in Portland by going online to kboo.fm/underwriting. That's kboo.fm/underwriting.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland patients exposed to HIV. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are formally declared the Republican nominees for president and vice president. And Portland mourns the loss of acclaimed chef Naomi Pomeroy. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 16, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Providence Health and Service and Legacy Health released statements that roughly 2,400 patients may have been exposed to infections that include HIV and hepatitis B and C between 2017 and May of 2024. A physician with the Oregon Anesthesiology Group may have breached infection control protocol and put patients at, quote, a low risk of exposure to possible infections, end quote. The physician was contracted to work at Providence Willamette Falls Medical Center in Oregon City, Providence Portland Medical Center in Northeast Portland, and Legacy Mount Hood Medical Center in Gresham. Scott Gallagher, a spokesperson for the Oregon Anesthesiology Group, said the doctor is no longer employed by them. Gallagher said, quote, when we learned that the physician had violated infection control practices, we suspended him, informed our partners Legacy Health and Providence, and then began an investigation that resulted in the physician's termination. Even though the risk of infection was low, new protocols and procedures have been put in place to prevent similar incidents in the future. End quote. The hospital systems are contacting patients who may have been affected, suggesting they get a blood test screen at no charge, quote, out of an abundance of caution, end quote. The physician's name has not been released. former President Donald Trump was formally nominated as the Republican candidate at the Republican National Convention. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance was announced as his running mate, despite Vance's past opposition to Trump. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're tracking the 2024 election process from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee.
Pursuant to Rule 40D of the rules of the Republican Party, I formally declare President Donald J. Trump and J.D. Vance as the Republican nominees for President and Vice President of the United States.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson announcing that former President Donald Trump is formally up for nomination as the GOP presidential candidate. Earlier, after a long buildup, Trump announced on social media that his running mate would be Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. At one point, Vance had sharply opposed Trump, even calling him America's Hitler. But the freshman senator went on to prove his loyalty, insisting the former president actually won in 2020 and serving as an attack dog on cable news, as he did before Trump was found guilty of fraud in New York.
What was the Russia collusion hoax? It was about destroying Donald Trump. This ridiculous New York fraud case, it's about destroying the guy's wealth before he reenters the Oval Office.
In Milwaukee for the RNC, former GOP presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy says he has a lot of faith in the new ticket.
I think there's an opportunity for this to be the strongest presidential ticket of our lifetime.
One big question is how well the Ohio senator with working class roots will do in the Rust Belt swing states. And the selection of Vance is taking some by surprise. Michigan delegate A.J. Dodd says the pick caught him off guard, but he says he quickly came to see it as a smart strategic move.
It kind of took me by surprise because I felt Youngkin would probably get it. But when I analyzed it, I think it was really genius. Only because I think, along with Trump's business experience, Vance is going to bring a younger, more vibrant generation.
Vance, a lawyer, author, and venture capitalist, is 39, much younger than either presidential candidate. Michigan delegate Matthew DiPerno says voters in that state will be energized by him. DiPerno says Vance would make a worthy torchbearer for the Make America Great Again movement.
Voters across Michigan, I think they'll get excited about J.D. Vance. He's young.
All right.
He's a conservative. And I think he will be someone who can carry on Trumpism even after Trump is out of the White House in 4 years.
In the convention hall, Trump's support seems total and control of the party entirely uniform. Georgia Congressman Rich McCormick has praise for him as a campaigner.
He's masterful at keeping the focus right where he wants it. And now he's our nominee. If we're going to win, we got to get 100% be behind him. We got to sell what we're trying to accomplish, which is wins on the elementary things.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
Acclaimed Portland chef Naomi Pomeroy drowned while tubing with her husband, restaurateur Kyle Lyndon Webster, on the Willamette River near Corvallis on July 13th. Their flotilla hit a snag and flipped over in the fast-moving currents. While Webster was able to make it to shore, Pomeroy didn't resurface. Pomeroy opened the fine dining restaurant Beast in 2007, helping to redefine the Portland food scene. She won the James Beard Foundation Award for Best Chef Northwest in 2014. Her most recent endeavor was the frozen custard shop Cornet Custard, co-founded with Mike Paredes. Pomeroy was a champion for restaurateurs across the country. Michael Russell, restaurant critic for The Oregonian, notes, quote, "Naomi was a co-founder of this independent restaurant coalition, which was a national organization that fought for funds and other things for independent restaurants," end quote. In a statement, Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer remembered Pomeroy as, quote, "not just a fabulous chef and entrepreneur, but an amazing human being. Her impact went far beyond Portland, helping establish our leadership and reputation for food excellence. She will be greatly missed," end quote. All parties say they want to avoid expansion of the war in Gaza to Lebanon, but unless a ceasefire is reached between Israel and Hamas, expansion will occur. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is the chief obstacle here. He continues to insist on total victory over Hamas. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Reports from the Middle East these days make the same points. All the parties say they want to avoid a wider war. Negotiators move between Cairo and Qatar like customers in the revolving door of a department store. Yet all the signs point in the opposite direction, to a wider war centered in Lebanon. Israel's army is preparing to expand the war into Lebanon, where it would face a heavily armed foe very different from Hamas, many more fighters, and a huge missile and drone arsenal that could overwhelm Israel's Iron Dome defenses. But Israel may have the backing of the U.S. in a war with Hezbollah, according to a CNN report. When top national security officials from both countries met in late June, CNN reports, quote, U.S. officials made clear that the Biden administration would offer Israel the security assistance it needs, though the U.S. would not deploy American troops in the ground in such a scenario. Such thinking is deeply troubling. For while the Biden administration is anxious to avoid an Israel-Hezbollah war and has committed diplomatic resources to prevent one, Israel literally calls the shots. Should the constant exchanges of fire across the Lebanon border escalate and the Israelis suffer significant casualties, the U.S. would probably jump in with a great deal more aid. Biden, at the weakest point in his presidency, seems incapable of standing in Israel's way. Parenthetically, I wonder if any other Democrat would be any different. The Biden administration's lifting of a hold on delivery of 2,000-pound bombs to Israel is telling. All it took was loud complaints from Prime Minister Netanyahu. Israel is said to be wanting these bombs for possible use against Hezbollah. Thus, Israel once again gets whatever it wants from the U.S., and the U.S. is complicitous in Israel's warfare. And then there's Israeli politics and Netanyahu's ambitions. He's the ultimate political survivor, but he faces multiple problems. One is the Israeli Supreme Court's decision that the government must start recruiting ultra-religious young men for military service. Another is pushback from his military leaders. Reports from Israel indicate that the Israeli Defense Forces want a pause in the Gaza campaign, either to make de-escalation in Lebanon more achievable or to prepare for war with Hezbollah. To which Netanyahu repeats his mantra, quote, the war in Gaza will end once Israel achieves all of its objectives, including the destruction of Hamas and the release of all of our hostages, unquote. The latest Israeli offensive in Gaza and the high civilian death toll show that his strategy will not change. Iran, meanwhile, reportedly wants to avoid having to back Hezbollah in a full-fledged war, despite its recent warnings of a, quote, obliterating war if Israel launches a full-scale attack in Lebanon. Iran has plenty of reasons for not wanting a war. It has just elected a new president who, by Iran's standards, is a moderate. It has a multitude of economic problems, and should war occur, its nuclear facilities, which are expanding, would be fair game for Israel. In short, the incentives for Iran to avoid a major new war significantly outweigh the incentives to provoke one. So, my essential point, the key to preventing an Israel-Hezbollah war is an Israel-Hamas ceasefire, and Israel's prime minister is the main obstacle. Unless and until the Biden administration is willing to exert serious pressure on Netanyahu's government to accept a permanent ceasefire and bring the war with Hamas to an end, in other words, accept the Biden plan, Hezbollah will have every reason to make life very difficult for the Israeli Defense Forces. And no one knows that better than IDF commanders, which is why they are arguing with Netanyahu behind the scenes for bringing the combat in Gaza to a close. So far, he won't. Egged on by right-wing members of his cabinet who, as I reported last week, want Netanyahu to take the opposite tack, fully support the settler population in the West Bank with a view to annexing it. That's a recipe for another Palestinian uprising. It seems that once again Netanyahu has trapped Biden into going along rather than giving Israel an ultimatum. An unnamed U.S. Defense Department official says, quote, we have let Israel face zero consequences for crossing all of our red lines in Gaza, so they are emboldened and know they will face no consequences for going into Lebanon, despite us saying, don't go there. Biden, says a State Department official, is, quote, pushing to not engage in a war, but our saying we will support Israel, I don't believe is helping. Not helping is putting it mildly. U.S. policy toward Israel amounts to a green light for a wider war. This cannot be Biden's legacy. I'm Mel Gertov for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, it's a special Pride Month panel focusing on queer sports. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy in the evening, with more clouds rolling in overnight and a low of 64 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cooler, with a high of 90 degrees and early clouds giving way to a sunny afternoon. Today in history, in 1790, George Washington signs the Residence Act, establishing the District of Columbia as the capital of the United States. The quote of the day is from comedian Stephen Wright, who said, quote, "Do you think that when they asked George Washington for ID, that he just whipped out a quarter?" End quote. A voter advocacy organization reacts to the choice of Senator J.D. Vance, Republican Ohio, as Donald Trump's vice presidential running mate and its potential impact in Ohio and the nation. Nadia Ramlagan has more on the story.
With Monday's announcement that Ohio Senator J.D. Vance is the vice presidential candidate on the GOP ticket, progressive groups say they're concerned about Senator Vance's voting record and how his decisions have affected the state's working class. Vance is a venture capitalist with investments in the healthcare industry. Desiree Timms with Innovation Ohio lists Vance's support for a national abortion ban, major corporations, and some of his healthcare stances as concerning.
Well, I understand it may be very exciting for our Republican friends on the other side of the aisle. I think the public at large should be concerned and really paying attention to Senator Vance's record, albeit brief in the U.S. Senate, but impactful nonetheless.
Vance opposes gender-affirming care for minors and supports denying health care coverage to immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. The 39-year-old Vance, who has been in the U.S. Senate for a year and a half, was announced as Trump's 2024 running mate on Monday afternoon at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Timms says now is the time for Ohio voters to educate themselves on the issues and register to vote. So far, more than 2.5 million people have been purged from the state's voter rolls. She says Ohioans will likely see a measure on the ballot this fall to reform the state's redistricting process, including replacing Ohio's redistricting commission with a voter-elected independent body.
That's yet another opportunity for Ohioans to weigh in on direct democracy and participate on how they want districts to be managed and drawn in this state.
Timms adds the last couple of days have been somber and sad for the nation, as well as a call to tone down political rhetoric as more innocent lives were lost to gun violence.
The assassination attempt on Donald Trump was certainly scary for folks in attendance and folks watching, and really just has no place in our democracy, especially when we're talking about political violence.
Support for this reporting is provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. This is Nadia Ramlagan for Ohio News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A University of Nevada, Las Vegas sociology professor shares insights into the potential impact and fallout following the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump this weekend in Pennsylvania. Alex Gonzalez has more on the story.
Plenty of political and social leaders are calling for unity and condemning political violence after this weekend's assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. However, a University of Nevada, Las Vegas sociologist says he isn't too optimistic about the country's capacity to use this political moment to catalyze change. Robert Futrell is an expert in studying social movements and social change. He says while Saturday's event has every hallmark of a political and social turning point, he thinks that it's unlikely to happen given the country's recent history.
If we can't come together and imagine that a better world is possible without political violence, without guns kind of fueling that, helping to fuel that, I'm not sure that this one is going to turn the tide either, unfortunately.
Utrell says the question becomes, can and will the U.S. find the political willpower to act and stem the tide on the various forms of violence plaguing the nation? Recent research shows almost 7% of Americans believe the use of force would be appropriate to restore former President Donald Trump to office, and 10% of Americans say political violence would be justified to prevent Trump from becoming president again. Futrell says conspiracy theorists have already started to alter the symbolic images from Saturday's fiasco. He's seen altered images of Secret Service agents smiling as the tragedy took place. According to Futrell, conspiracy theorists take a slight shred of evidence, altered or not, to create what he calls a mythology that fits pre-established ideas about how politics and power work, which he says adds dangerous fuel to the fire.
After the horror of there's been a shooting of a former president goes past, and we're probably already past that in some ways, that the tales will get spun in the ways that seem politically beneficial to who's ever spinning, be that the far right, the left, and conspiracists are really good at that.
Futrell adds not everyone thinks about the power words hold. And while he appreciates the immediate sentiment of unity, he encourages everyone to reflect moving forward.
We need to debate, but debate on grounds that don't lead to deep tensions and hatred. So I agree with all that. I would ask folks to think about whether they individually and we collectively are doing that a week from now, a month from now, a year from now.
For Nevada News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Beavers can help reduce damage caused by wildfires. The animals create wetlands that can reduce drying and burning. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Forest fires can race through dry vegetation and trees, leaving behind a desolate landscape.
Everything around you is burnt to a crisp, and the forests are really silent. All the animals are gone, all the birds are gone.
Emily Fairfax is a geographer at the University of Minnesota who studies how beavers, yes, beavers, can help reduce the damage caused by wildfires. By building dams and digging channels, beavers create wetlands that support moist vegetation. This water can prevent the land from drying out during a drought and stifle any wildfires that try to burn through.
The beaver wetland comes into view, and it's a completely different situation. It's suddenly very loud. You hear birds calling, you hear amphibians calling, you hear the fish jumping and the water splashing, you hear the beavers grumbling and chatting with one another, and everything's green and everything's lush.
Fairfax says beaver populations have been decimated across much of North America. But some wildlife officials in states like California are now reintroducing beavers to make the land more resilient, especially as climate change raises the risk of extreme fires.
If we can work with natural processes and animals like beavers, we have a lot better shot of actually protecting these landscapes we care about.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A river sued a city and won. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin have more on the story.
A river sued a city and won. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A document called Project 2025 is a clear roadmap for what a Republican president would do if elected, and would have serious effects on U.S. policy regarding climate and the environment.
The 900-plus page book assembled by the Conservative Heritage Foundation would enable a new administration to begin dismantling many roles and offices related to energy and the environment.
Project 2025 would add almost 4.5 billion tons of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere in 5 years, effectively eliminating twice the savings from all clean energy technologies since 2019. Instead, President Biden's plans would cut emissions by 50%.
The conservatives would have the U.S. withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement again, this time permanently, by exiting the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, meant to stabilize greenhouse gas concentrations.
Investment and support for renewable energy and electric vehicles would be reduced or ended under Project 2025, and it would encourage fossil fuel development on federal lands.
The blueprint calls for rolling back air and water protections and the dismantling of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the agency that oversees climate, oceans, and fisheries.
An advisor involved in the next COP29 climate summit told the news outlet Capital in Maine that the prospect of a Trump presidency dominates the planning for the conference to be held in November, just 6 days after the election.
Last week, a court in Ecuador ruled that the rights of a river had been violated by pollution coming from the country's capital city.
The Machangara River begins in the Andes and runs through Quito, where 2.5 million people live.
The court decided that the city had breached the rights of the river by failing to treat nearly all the wastewater being dumped into it.
Ecuador's constitution recognizes that nature, including rivers, has rights to protection and restoration, which all people and communities are empowered to enforce.
The complaint was filed by the Kitu Karu indigenous people. Although the city has appealed, the judge ruled that it must still devise and implement a comprehensive plan to address the pollution.
The river is a critical source of water and an ecological corridor, but the contamination, such as solid waste, severely diminishes oxygen levels that aquatic life needs.
Several countries in Latin America grant residents constitutional rights to a clean environment, but Ecuador recognizes that nature has rights not to be degraded or polluted.
The Key Largo tree cactus can grow up to 20 feet tall. It has cream-colored, garlic-scented flowers that reflect moonlight and attract bat pollinators, as well as reddish-purple fruit that entice birds and mammals. Or rather, it did.
The cacti that grow in the Florida Keys have fallen victim to climate change in what researchers are calling the first local extinction of a species caused by sea level rise in the U.S.
The eponymous cacti were only first discovered in an isolated mangrove forest on Key Largo in 1992, when there was a thriving stand of around 150 stems. By 2021, saltwater intrusion from rising seas, coupled with soils being washed away from hurricanes and high tides, reduced that number to 6 ailing fragments, which scientists relocated to greenhouses to ensure their survival.
Florida officials have tentative plans to replant some Key Largo tree cactus in the wild, but that may be only temporary given continued global warming. The highest point on Key Largo was only 15 feet above sea level, and projections are that the water could rise around 13 inches by 2040, and worst case, up to 11 feet by the end of the century.
Jennifer Posley with the Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden and lead author of the study documenting the population's decline said the cacti may be a bellwether for how other low-lying coastal plants will respond to climate change.
And finally, if you're an astronaut on a spacewalk, it's not only okay to pee in your pants, but also expected.
Since the 1970s, crew members strolling outside a spacecraft have to don maximum absorbency garments, or MAGs, which are more or less adult diapers for when nature calls.
Astronauts have long complained that MAGs are uncomfortable, leak, and not hygienic, sometimes leading to urinary tract infections. Additionally, the suits carry only 1 liter of drinking water, which is not enough for longer spacewalks that would likely occur in upcoming Artemis missions to the moon.
Researchers at Cornell University think they have a solution. Inspired by the Dune novels by Frank Herbert, in which inhabitants of a desert planet wear still suits that can collect urine and recycle it into drinking water, the team has designed a real-world prototype that can do the same in just 5 minutes.
Their still suit knockoff involves a collection cup that fits around genitalia and connects to a sensor-activated pump that whisks away moisture to a backpack filtration system where it gets purified into water that the astronaut can drink.
Currently aboard the International Space Station, 98% of wastewater is recycled, and if the new suit becomes available, it would hopefully make water reuse here on Earth a bit more appealing.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You're
are listening to the KABU Evening News for Tuesday, July 16, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Nate Kapp and Mel Gertov. The producer is Nate Kapp, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Faraz Siddiqui, Nadia Ramlagan, Alex Gonzalez, Anthony Lizowitz, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Making contact.
Making contact.
This is Making Contact, and I'm Anita Johnson. Did you know that July is Disability Pride Month, which commemorates the July 26, 1990, anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act? Considered to be one of the most important civil rights laws since the 1960s. On this edition of Making Contact, we'll revisit the story of disabled persons embracing their disabilities as integral parts of who they are, and the dynamic and complex relationship of care receiving and giving for disabled persons. Here's Laura Flynn with more.
The minute I walked through the door, her name was Gladys. Her face would light up and she'd be so happy. Come on, Camille, this is what we're doing today. We're going to do this, that, and the other.